Hey, Matt, how's it going?
Jonathan, I'm doing great. How are you?
Good. This is another episode of the Agony of Defeat podcast. I'm Jonathan Weiler, professor of global studies at UNC Chapel Hill.
And I'm Matt Andrews, professor of history at UNC Chapel Hill. And both Jonathan and I are interested in sports and teach classes about sports here. So you should listen to us. We have authority. We know of which we speak.
What we don't have, however, or I'm going to speak for myself now, based on my bracket so far. Is meaningful insight.
Meaningful, yeah.
Into what is going to happen each March in the NCAA.
Yeah, obviously. Well, I kind of watch less and less college basketball as I get older.
During the season.
During the season, yeah. I'm doing nothing but watching college basketball now. And it's like, how could I possibly have picked St. Mary's? Of course, Grand Canyon is going to beat them. What was I thinking?
You know. So I had the good fortune. I met some buddies in Pittsburgh last week for opening round NCAA games.
That's why you were there.
Fine. And I was in the building when Oakland beat Kentucky.
Oh, sweet.
Which was awesome.
Very cool.
I had Kentucky going to the Final Four.
Okay.
So that was not good for my bracket, but
yeah.
But for every other spiritual reason, it was awesome.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure that was great. I'm sure because the Kentucky fans turn out.
They do. Oh, the arena was very blue. Yes,
yeah,
yes,
because we've been to these tournaments where it's UNC and Kentucky and UCLA and Illinois, and Kentucky wins the fan passion. Yeah. Ball there. All right. So they must have been suffering mightily.
They were. They. I would say seriously when the game was over. I mean, you know, it's one of those things when you're watching such a huge upset, the whole arena, except for the fans of the team, are going crazy.
Everyone's rooting against the
other team.
Yeah,
which is great. Yeah. And so it really feels like this insane home game. And the word I would use to describe Kentucky fans after the game was sheer despondency.
I thought you were going to say blue. I thought you were going to go with a pun. Yeah.
Deep blue.
Deep blue. Yeah. Well, that was an incredible game. I've already forgotten that guy's name because he's out of the tournament.
Jack Gaulke.
Yes, but come on. 10 threes. Let's be serious. That's
a Division II transfer. By the way,
Maybe we're going to talk a little bit about transfers into programs. So, do you only have one bracket?
I decided to go with the bracket of integrity. I just have one bracket.
See, I have like nine, so I'm doing okay in some of them, and because I'm in so many different pools,
I am going down with the ship. What's happening?
Yeah, and my brackets are pretty lame. Like I've got the what I want to have happen bracket. So I got the heels winning a couple brackets.
I have UNC winning in my bracket. By the
good,
way,
good for you. And this is actually what you think is going to happen.
No.
Oh, okay.
I feel like they are good enough for it to be plausible.
Oh, absolutely.
And therefore, I'm picking them to...
Yeah. And I have the heels in some. I have the... I've got UConn in a bunch. Because let's be honest, UConn is clearly the best team out there.
UConn is a steamroller.
They look great. And they're not even hitting from the outside in the last couple of games. And they're still going up by like 50 in some of these games. Anyway, I'm rooting for the heels to beat them. I'm having fun watching ball. Yeah. And... Jonathan, I'm watching women's basketball as well. And I have a little bit in the past, but I think I'm like a lot of Americans now. I am just into it all of a
sudden.
Waking
up to it.
And it's just about to get good because those early rounds when the games are always on the home court of the better seeds, there's very little drama there. But the tournament starts now with the Sweet 16.
So I have a close friend, Julie, who's a huge UConn women's fan.
Yeah.
Huge. And I always... follow them. Yeah. And I'm also a Paige Beckers fan.
She's great.
I actually want to do a Paige Beckers, Caitlin Clark comp at some point.
Okay. You mean today?
Yeah. At some point in our podcast. Yeah.
Right.
I love watching Caitlin Clark also. And last year, the New York Liberty, I watched almost every game.
Really?
And they are super fun to watch and include some all-time college greats like Breonna Stewart, of course, played at UConn. During the era when they didn't lose a game for 3 years or something.
Right. 114?
Something like
games?
That, yeah. So, in any event, like you, and like many Americans, I am waking up to the women's game.
Well, we've both woken up to it, and I'm just going to say it. The game has just improved by leaps and bounds in the last 5 years. The quality of play is just freaking better than it was 10, 15, 20 years ago.
I think about Matt. I mean, this is partly whatever my old guy-ness, but I think about, I know we're going to talk about Kim Mulkey at some point today, the LSU coach. And I remember watching her when she was a player at Louisiana Tech 40 years ago. It was a different game.
Yeah.
The women just played differently back then.
Yeah.
The athleticism now is crazy.
It sure is.
And so it's just, yeah, it's, they're just great. I'm not trying to be patronizing about this. They're just great ball players.
Yeah. Well, Joe, we have broken the cardinal. I know this isn't a lecture, but if this were a lecture, we've already made a huge mistake. You're always supposed to say what you're going to do at the start of the session.
Yes, that's true.
Here's what I'm going to do. And then you do it. And then you tell people what you just did. We haven't even told people what we're going to do.
So Matt, tell us what we're going to do.
Okay. Well, we've already started doing it. We want to talk about the NCAA tournament and maybe a little bit about the men's tournament. Jonathan sent me an interesting article that I'd like to talk about. And then let's talk about the women's game, about the women's tournament. You can make that Clark and Becker's link. And then just because it is suddenly in the news everywhere, we want to talk about sports gambling, a phenomenon that I am not unaware of. I'm guessing you're not unaware of it either.
No,
I'm
not unaware of it either.
But I'm a little uneasy with what's going on. I'm very uneasy with what's going
on.
Matt,
I feel the same
right
way.
Now. All right. So we need to...
and it has a particular collegiate angle that I know we'll talk about.
Yeah, that's, yeah. All right.
Yeah.
So NCAA tournament, emphasis on the women's game, hyper emphasis on Kim Mulkey, maybe. And then we're going to talk about.
Yeah. All right, but let's start with Caitlin Clark.
Okay.
So who said she was interviewed sometime in the last week or two. And I don't have the exact quote, but it was like it wasn't braggadocio at all. She just commented to the effect
If it was. I
agree. But she just said, you know, essentially, I'm the biggest star in college basketball right now. And she meant men or women. I made that comment to you a few months ago.
Yeah.
That for the first time ever.
So she recognized it and she's owning it.
Yeah. And it wasn't like it just is true that if you just polled Americans, name one college basketball player you know.
Yeah.
There's no question
she
would come in first.
Yeah.
And I think that says interesting things about what's happened to the men's game. And it obviously says interesting things about what's happened to the women's game.
Yeah.
And then her particular stardom, which just I mentioned this to Matt and Kyle off the air just a moment ago. Ice Cube runs this 3-on-3 basketball league and just announced today that he's offered her $5 million to play in his 3-on-3 league this summer.
I recommend she accept the money. That's what I would do.
We give financial advice on the show. That's one of the things we do.
Is it? I've never watched the 3-on-3 tournament. Is it two men and a woman? Is there a gender
think that's right, but I don't know.
Okay, I mean, it doesn't matter because who are you going to pick? Me
and I know Lisa Caitlin Leslie, Clark? A former WNBA star. She won. Her team won last summer.
So then it probably is a gender component.
Yeah,
all right, cool. Yeah, well, she's so fun to watch. I mean, she's obviously influenced by Steph Curry's game, and she's pulling it off, unlike most of the guys in the men's game who are just jacking it up, you know, left and right. And, you know, we're going to get to Mulkey. Did you see the little snide comment that Mulkey had about Clark?
I know, what'd she say?
She didn't say Clark, but she said, well, I wouldn't allow anyone on our team to shoot 40 times a game. And, you know, well, I'm not at first. There's no way she's shooting 40 times.
No,
a game.
She's not.
Yeah,
she's not.
And why not have Caitlin Clark shoot 40 times a game?
It seems like a good strategy.
Does Kim Mulkey know where she's at? She's at LSU. They used to have a guy named Pete Maravich who literally shot 40 times a game. And that's why he's the NCAA's all-time leading scorer, men's scorer.
Yes, because
Caitlin Clark has now surpassed
his total.
All right, so we're in awe of Caitlin Clark.
Yeah, and I want to say a little bit more about that because I, like most of America, I became aware of her last year when she was a junior. And she was a great player her first 2 years, but last year she became a superstar, a phenomenon. She regularly cans jumpers from the logo. Yeah. This is 35 or 40 feet from the basket. She's just an exceptional shooter. She's a great passer. I mean, she really does have a Curry game in lots of ways because she's both a playmaker, has the insane release that you feel like you're right on top of her.
Yeah.
And the ball is away.
That's right.
And so. She's super fun to watch. She's also on an interesting team, Iowa, she is not surrounded by elite recruits. She is by far the standout player on that team.
But they have some great shooters on that team.
And
kind of to their detriment, I watched the Big Ten championship game, and Caitlin Clark was not hitting all the big shots. Her teammates were, yes. But the headline was Caitlin Clark hits big shot. You know, it's like the Tiger Woods effect.
It's true. She's had a couple of games where just shooting percentage wise recently, she has not been great, but she's just always going to get the most
attention. Always get the accolades, but she's got good teammates that can bail her
out. She's got good teammates. And so just to connect her to Kim Mulkey for a second, for those who don't know, Iowa made the national championship game last year, facing Kim Mulkey's LSU team, which has its own superstar, Angel Reese.
Right.
And LSU won the game, and there was this interesting sort of finger wagging back and forth between Angel Reese, who, by the way, is black, and Caitlin Clark is white.
Yeah, and not by the way, that's essential information in this story.
Yeah, I sort of meant that facetiously, but Caitlin Clark, I think her race, a friend of mine texted me last night. He said, I'm really enjoying watching Larry Bird. I mean, Caitlin Clark.
Yeah.
So there's an interesting parallel there, I think.
Without a doubt. And you know what? The wave that college basketball is on right now has a lot to do with that final game. It has to do with Iowa and Clark and Reese and LSU. And you know that I teach a course on race and basketball. And we're in the NBA in the 1980s. Mm. And what does the NBA have? They have this great black versus white rivalry. They've got a racial controversy in some ways that is fueling interest in the league. Well, guess what?
Magic versus Bird.
That's all women's basketball needed. It just needed a good racial controversy to take it into the heights. I'm not rooting for it, but in hindsight, I think it's the best thing that could have happened to women's basketball.
Yes. I mean, there's no doubt that I saw an interview recently that Rex Chapman, the former Kentucky superstar, NBA player, fell in hard times with addiction, became a social media legend, and has a new book out. I think it's called It's Not Easy Being Me or something that.
He's an incredibly thoughtful,
lovely guy. And Pablo Torre was interviewing him recently on his podcast. And Rex Chapman was talking about how much the interest in him when he was coming out of college was because he was white. And that's what the fan base is.
And I'm going to quote Charles Barkley here.
Yeah.
A white dude who has black legs. That is literally what Charles Barkley said about him. He was a white player who had tremendous athleticism.
Yes.
Boy, and that's the winning combination in this country to be a
So, but just to be clear, we're really talking in two registers right now. Because one register is just what sort of moves the media needle, et cetera, and that's this racial dynamic.
Yes.
And the other is the women's game. And Caitlin Clark is a fantastic player.
Yeah, and there are a lot of fantastic players out there. You got Beckers, who I know you're going to talk about.
Yep.
You've got
Juju Watkins.
Juju Watkins at USC. My pick in my women's bracket, USC to upset Southern California. So the real USC.
To upset South Carolina.
Sorry, what did I say?
You said Southern California,
That's exactly right. Yeah, Southern Cal, the real USC, is going to beat South Carolina, the not real USC, in my book. Yeah. Malaysia Fulwiley at South Carolina. I have never seen a women's player with such moves. I mean, Fulwiley is going to be a verb that we are going to be.
Fulwiley.
She was Fulwiley.
Can you conjugate that for me?
Yeah, I was Fulwiley. You were Fulwiley. She's going to Fulwiley a lot of people.
Yeah.
It's almost as if Cheryl Miller, Rebecca Lobo, and Cheryl Swoops are all in the NCAA at the same time. We've never seen such talent this.
We should shout out quickly, by the way, since we're going to say maybe some unkind things about Kim Mulkey, who's a great coach.
Clearly.
Dawn Staley, who's built South Carolina into the new powerhouse in women's college basketball, was a great player at UVA many years ago and has
a great USA basketball player.
Yeah, and South Carolina itself has become, along with UConn, Iowa, you know, one of the biggest brands in college basketball.
3 years ago when Roy Williams retired and we didn't know who the coach at UNC was going to be. I mean, I thought, okay, it's probably going to be Hubert Davis.
Yes,
but I remember saying my top two picks for the head coach of UNC, Dawn Staley.
I remember you saying that, actually.
And
yes.
Barack Obama, because that dude could recruit. And so I'm putting her in the category of Obama. That's how highly I think of Dawn Staley. Boy, did they do a number on our UNC Tar Heels the other day, too.
What was the final?
I don't know. They were up 50 and I turned it off.
Yeah. I think they won by over 50.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a disappointing year.
Disappointing year for the UNC women, for sure.
Yeah, but that's a tough get. South Carolina in South Carolina. So what are you going to do?
Yeah.
All right. Well, what's your Beckers Clark thing? Did you have a
so Paige Beckers, I think, got, if I remember correctly, she's a year older than Clark.
Yeah, and about 3 years ago, she was the player.
She was the player, yeah. And she is fantastic.
She sure
I
is.
Love watching her. Yeah. She's similar to Clark. She's just a great shooter, great athlete.
Great handles.
Similar, 6 foot tall, yeah. You know, very similar kind of player. She had to sit out all of last year because she's had a bunch of injuries.
Ooh, devastating knee injury.
Sat out all of last year because of a knee injury. I was actually looking at
her. Doesn't show it when I watch her play
now.
No,
I know.
I guess it just speaks to what doctors are doing with knee injuries now.
And there's
right?
a whole thing I know that young women are more susceptible to ACL injuries. Yep. And but so I was looking up her stats recently because she is now like totally off the radar. People barely talk about her.
UConn with their 11 national championships, UCLA standard, or somehow off the radar.
Off the radar. Yeah. And they're great this year, but they're not as good as South Carolina or Iowa.
Yeah, but watch out. Man.
But watch out because they're loaded with talent. And so there's two things I want to say about Beckers. One, if you look at her stats, she shoots a higher percentage from 3-point range than Clark does.
Not surprised.
Clark is like 39%. She's like 42%.
Okay.
Her, you know, she doesn't get as many assists as Clark, but she's very similar in terms of all of her other stats. Like, she's great.
Yeah.
But partly because she does play on a team that is loaded with 5-star recruits.
Yeah.
And
doesn't need to do it all.
Doesn't need to do it all.
Not that Clark
just,
does.
It's just interesting to me because 3 years ago, Beckers was Clark.
Yes.
But the game wasn't getting as much attention. And Clark also, she's got some magic about her for
sure.
She does,
without a doubt. Yeah.
So, anyway.
We'll see, though. She didn't win it last year. I've got her losing to LSU again in the regional final.
Okay.
I mean, I am rooting for an LSU-Iowa matchup. I just want to see it again.
Yep.
But she's going to be the number one pick in the WNBA. If she goes to the WNBA, I mean, Ice Cube's giving her $5 million.
Right. Well, I just looked this up earlier today. The maximum rookie salary in the WNBA.
Oh, they have a maximum rookie salary.
Do you want to guess?
The maximum salary is about $240,000.
Like
and that's a lot more than it was three or four years ago.
It's a joke, but yes, it's a lot more.
I don't know what the maximum rookie salary is.
$76,000.
No.
I mean, so this is a woman who is making millions in endorsements plus the $5 million. I mean, so I think she wants to go to the WNBA because I think she wants the competition.
Why wouldn't she?
She wants to play at that level. But, I mean, she might as well donate that salary to charity because it's like...
Yeah, and I'm not advising this, but if there's
anyone... Even though we do give financial advice on this show, as we've established.
If there's anyone who could change that all by themselves, it's Caitlin Clark. You say, guess what?
Yeah.
I'm not coming to the league
unless
you fix this and raise everyone's salary.
Yeah.
I haven't looked at the books at the WNBA. I don't know what they're bringing in, what they're not bringing in. But they're going to bring in a lot more with Caitlin Clark in the league and then Angel Reese in the league and Juju Watkins in the league.
Well, this is, by the way, this is where all this sort of BS accounting that these franchises do is BS. Just for example, can we doubt that some of the increase in the fan base for the NBA women is because of the WNBA?
Oh, got it.
Right? And so
that's interesting.
Yeah.
I don't doubt that.
Right. So, but that will never be part of the accounting.
Part of the calculation
of what the WNBA's value is. Just to take one example.
Right.
So
that's interesting.
These valuations, anyway, it doesn't matter. But so Caitlin Clark, as you said, she will be the number one overall pick. She will make a $76,000 salary.
And then the next year she can make the max?
I think it's a few years.
It's probably tiered along those lines.
I think
unreal.
It's,
well, that may change.
It may change.
Caitlin Clark has the power to make that
Look,
change.
Matt, this is the reason why, I mean, we'll talk about Brittany Griner. This is the reason why so many women players have gone overseas.
Go overseas and go to
places like Russia, Turkey, China, et cetera.
Where they get $1 million.
Where they make $1 million. And Brittany Griner was there in 2022 when she was arrested and thrown in jail for 10 months.
Well, let's talk about her former coach, Kim Mulkey, who I think really did the women's game a disservice with the timing of her press conference just a couple of days ago. the NCAA Women's Tournament is riding a high. Everyone's paying attention to it. And then the story became about Kim Mulkey, who's very, very upset about allegedly this Washington Post piece that's coming out. And in
I just emphasize, it's not out yet.
No, it's not out.
Yeah.
And in really, I'm going to describe it as this: in prime Trumpian fashion, has just threatened a lawsuit because she thinks it's going to be negative
and bash the media.
You can't. But this is why no one trusts anything anymore. Yeah, I mean, it was Trumpian. That is the word.
One of the things she said that I thought was, "This is, are you hearing yourself talk right now?" Was the journalist is a guy named Kent Babb. He's a very well-respected journalist, friend of Matt's and my podcast. Jeff Perlman was praising him on Twitter recently. Kim Mulkey, in her own press conference, said, "I was ambushed. I and LSU were ambushed just 2 days before the tournament by all of these questions."
Which would be a fair critique, except
yeah. She said 10 seconds later, "I've been refusing to talk. He's been asking to talk to me for 2 years.
2 years.
And I've been refusing."
Yeah.
So her idea of an ambush is he's been trying to ask me questions for 2 years, and now I'm being ambushed because he's put them in writing. And yeah. So.
She's criticizing the Washington Post for apparently this. He's going to quote former players who are only replying anonymously. That is standard practice for journalists. She's off base.
She also described as, quote, a hit piece, an article that Babb wrote about Brian Kelly. This is the LSU football coach a couple of years ago. It's a very moving article about a graduate assistant in the football program at LSU who makes $12,000 a year, has a master's degree, is living in poverty, when at a time when Kelly had just gotten a $100 million contract to coach LSU football. And the article has almost no, it is a little bit of criticism of Kelly. It's just about wealth disparity.
Right. It's not about Kelly.
It's not about Kelly. And she called that a hit piece.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, which gives you an idea of what in her mind constitutes unfair journalism.
Well, and we talked about this before we started recording. We're not pile on guys. Are we pile on guys? Because I just want to pile on right now with Mulkey. She really has made me angry over the years.
Yeah.
I want to go back to when she was the coach at Baylor. This is why I don't believe anything that she...
Where she won three national championships. Yeah. So she's an extraordinarily accomplished coach.
Great recruiter, amazing coach, amazing dresser. I love the outfits on the sideline. I say
she dressed down for the press conference, though.
Oh, I didn't know.
Very notably.
Did she?
People pointed that out.
She had a quote, not a quote. She took the microphone at a Baylor game. This was at a time when there was a lawsuit out there alleging over 52 sexual assaults of female Baylor students by male athletes. And the lawsuit suggested that they weren't being prosecuted. There was a cover-up. 52 sexual assaults of female Baylor students.
This is, by the way, when Ken Starr of Clinton impeachment fame was president of Baylor University and turning a blind eye to everything you're describing.
And now all the ADs and other people who were there, they're all now the ADs and the other people up at Liberty. They just moved right on over there. She took the microphone and defended Baylor's reputation and said, I've got her exact quote. If somebody is around you and they ever say, I will never send my daughter to Baylor, you knock them right in the face. That's her response to that. I'm done. That's all I need to know about Mulkey.
Yeah. So the most famous player she ever coached was Brittany Griner, the superstar, 6'8", an incredible college player, who also was controversial because of her, for lack of a better way of saying, her kind of gender appearance. And Griner has complained that Mulkey very much wanted Griner to sort of downplay her sexual orientation.
Not downplay it, just don't even
Don't talk about it.
Yeah, Griner says that explicitly in her autobiography.
That she was married to a woman.
Yeah.
wanted her not to talk about that because it would be bad for the university.
Yeah.
And then, and this is the part that
which to be fair is an issue that that the female basketball coaches have had to think about over the years.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
She's not the only one who felt like she had to think about this.
It's not even necessarily wrong. It's just that, I mean, I think this is in the vein of, we're not inclined to give Mulkey the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah.
Because of these other things, including when Griner was arrested in Russia. Yeah. And thrown in jail for 10 months. And Mulkey was asked, this is her most famous former player, for a comment. She wouldn't comment at all. Like, why?
She was bizarrely silent.
Yeah.
I genuinely do not understand that. What was that about?
Like, just say, I really hope for her safe return, like something.
But absolutely nothing. I mean, did you have any theory whatsoever about why she said nothing?
My only theory is that she has contempt for her in some basic way.
Because of her sexual orientation?
I mean, I don't know what else to say, because it doesn't make sense otherwise.
No, I know. So that was strike two. Strike three is this tirade. You know, she's good for a good quote. When South Carolina and LSU got in that fight, she said, I wish the South Carolina had punched Angel Reese in the face instead. I'm not exactly sure what she meant, but I think she meant Angel Reese is big and can take it.
Right.
But, you know, so that was a fun moment, I guess. And if South Carolina and LSU play each other again, talk about, you know, intensity. Yeah. I want to see that too. But Washington Post, if you're listening, do not back down. Publish that piece. I can't wait to.
We give financial and legal advice. And
legal advice
on this show. Yeah.
It's just so she's doing a disservice to herself. Now we all care about the piece.
100%.
I'm not sure I would have known it was coming out, but now I can't.
No, this is like PR 101.
She just feels like a human being who's slightly. Look, I'm sure being a big time women's basketball coach, wanting to be yourself, wear what you want, hearing what people have to say about you, I'm sure that is not easy.
The crap she's probably taken over the decades.
But she just, to me, feels like someone who's unraveling a bit at the seams.
Yes.
And yet she'll still maybe win the national championship this year.
She might.
Yeah. So, you didn't fill out a women's bracket?
I did not fill out a women's bracket.
Okay. Well, I did. Like I said, I got USC. You want to know how much money I got on USC in the tournament?
How much?
Okay, none, because I don't gamble on sports. And that is our skillful transition to our next topic.
Very nice.
About sports gambling, which I'm just going to say right now, I used to do a lot of when I was in college.
Like actual bet on games?
Yeah, betting on games. Like I went to UCLA. Me and my buddies, we drive to Vegas once a month.
You could do that.
Right, exactly. Bet on games and watch games. Yep. We did it, you know, before I was 21, did it after I was 21. Uh-huh. I learned a lesson.
I'm pretty sure the statute of limitations is up, so you're good.
I think so. That was 75 years ago.
Yeah,
now,
exactly.
So. I learned my lesson in that 5 years of sports gambling.
That the house always wins, that lesson?
you're going to lose eventually. Yeah. And do you really want your financial fate and your emotional well-being in the hands of a 19-year-old shooting free throws at the end of a St. Mary's, Arizona game? Because I remember this guy went 0-for-2 and I lost a lot of money. So that's my gambling street cred. I know of what I speak. I'm guessing you've wagered on the ponies before.
I've done almost exclusively, actually, is just pools, like football, either NCAA or betting football games against the spread in a pool, where I'm not putting money on each individual game.
Right.
Just putting $100.
Well, that got Rick Neuheisel fired from the University of Washington once.
That's true.
So,
true.
Boy, have we changed our minds as a culture about sports gambling.
Yeah. So, so a couple of things about gambling generally, and then we can talk about the NCAA specifically. One, I do absolutely think it should be legal.
I do too.
Making it.
It is now legal in this state as of about three weeks ago.
It is better for it to be legal than not legal, because it's going to happen anyway. And
Rob Gronkowski and Kevin Hart and others are reminding me of this every 20 minutes when I'm watching the NCAA tournament.
Yep.
Get your gambling on, dude. What are you doing?
Yep.
Yeah.
So absolutely it should be legal. That's one. Two, it is, from everybody I've talked to actually knows whereof they speak, it is an addiction that activates the same part of the brain as other addictions, drugs, alcohol, etc.
So, can I say something about that?
Yeah.
In the last 3 years, I have had three very serious conversations with male students here at this university who have had to take a leave of absence because of gambling addiction.
Wow.
And think about what's going on. And I hadn't thought of this, but having these conversations, it's sports, which we're addicted to.
Yep.
It's gambling,
yep.
which we're addicted to.
Yep.
And it's on our phones, which we are addicted to. You almost have no shot if you have an 18-year-old brain. And yet it's just, we're being bombarded with this. I can resist. You know, I'm looking over at Kyle over here. I don't know if resisting, not resisting. We're not going to ask you to bare your soul, but it's tough. Watch out. If you're listening to this, watch out about this.
Well, the reason one reason I bring up the addiction part is, like, I went to Vegas with some friends a few months ago, and I said, I'm willing.
Yeah, so we're not Puritans.
No. And I said, I'm willing to lose $200 for the weekend.
Right.
Betting, you know, mostly playing Texas Hold'em.
Yeah.
I lost $200.
And did you? Yeah.
I stopped.
Yeah.
You know,
but
because I can.
Yeah.
Which is just, there's nothing but luck that I don't have whatever.
And I've gone, when I was younger, I would go back to the ATM. I can't even imagine if it's just on my phone.
So Matt, so one thing that bothers me, just as a sports fan, when I'm watching a game, like an NBA game, and at the beginning of the fourth quarter, and you see this all the time now, the announcers, before they return to action, they let you know the spread for this quarter is now this.
And DraftKings is sponsoring
it. So they are now telling their audience, here's what you can bet on during the game.
Yeah.
And that really takes me aback that's happening.
Because, I mean, why?
Because it is an addiction.
Yeah.
And it does feel like it's getting close to really undermining the enterprise.
It is so.
And why people are following it and what it could be vulnerable to and all of that.
It is so obviously getting close. I mean, just this week or in the last couple of weeks, there's the revelation about Shohei Ohtani's interpreter and the $4.5 million. I don't know what happened there. Let's be honest. No one knows what happened there.
No,
we didn't even know the guy was married when he was married. So, and, you know, and then he had the press conference with his interpreter. I actually watched it and then I realized, wait a minute, I'm not going to learn anything from this. I mean, maybe if it was like Pete Rose was up there and I could look into his eyes and listen to his cadence. I've got absolutely.
Did you see Pete Rose's comment when
this all came out? Give it up for Pete, right?
So Pete Rose, who very famously, one of the greatest baseball players of all time, was banned for life for gambling on his own team, gambling on baseball, baseball's cardinal sin. You can't do that. He was banned for life.
Always betting on his team.
Betting on his team, right? Nobody's claiming that he fixed games or anything like that. For those of you who are not as big sports fans, just tiny bit of trivia, the commissioner who banned him for life was Bart Giamatti, whose son Paul Giamatti is the Oscar-winning actor.
Yep.
So,
And then Bart Giamatti dropped dead 10 days later from heart attack.
At the age of 51.
Yeah. And the way the press spun it was Pete Rose killed Bart Giamatti.
Yeah. But so Pete Rose, a couple of weeks ago, or no, more recently, said, well, thinking back to my gambling in the 70s and 80s, I now realize if I had a translator, I'd be all set.
I'd be scot-free.
I
thought that was fair.
It was fun.
We'll find out more. Kyle's a Dodgers fan. He doesn't like us talking about this. Just in, Shohei Ohtani has been suspended for life from Major League Baseball. Right. Kyle, would you like to react? No, not going to happen. If it turns out there's any kind of link there it could have been his bets. We don't know. All right. Just yesterday, a report came out in the NBA, and that the NBA is investigating. I assume the FBI is investigating that a player named Jonte Porter, who I had never heard of him either.
Jonte Porter. Yep.
That there were these strange coincidences of him playing a few minutes in two games and then coming out with a previously undisclosed injury. And so if you did a prop bet, which means not betting on the game and the point spread, betting on, will this player score that many points or grab this many rebounds, if you bet, you know, low on that prop bet, this guy's not going to score many points, you could win. And apparently there was a lot of money, an unusual amount of money placed on him on the under
and
for the prop bet.
I just read about this. There's this betting integrity organization that tracks unusual activity.
Yeah, and this is not hard to track computers. I mean, did you remember the story of about, I guess, about half a year ago? Someone put $100,000 on an Alabama LSU college baseball game in the middle of the season.
Which I don't remember this.
Unheard of. Yeah. And it turns out one of the coaches had news that the starter was about to be scratched, so called his buddy. This is Keystone Cops.
It's insider trading, right?
It's insider trading. It's so obvious when nobody bets $100,000 on an LSU Alabama game, but yet somebody did. Yep. So this is easy to figure out. But when it's the Super Bowl and every American is betting, you know, the half of their mortgage statistics tell us there's no way you're going to be able to figure this out. When it's the NBA Finals, when it's the World Series. Look, in the Jontay Porter case, I don't know if it was Porter. I don't know if it was the trainer. I don't know if it was the water boy. Who knows? It doesn't matter.
Yep.
They are flirting with disaster. Well, let me ask you this. I was about to say they're flirting with disaster. The whole enterprise goes under if it turns out that the sports we're watching aren't on the level.
Yeah.
They got a serious problem.
Yeah.
But let's say there's a huge point shaving scandal in the Super Bowl or the NBA Finals or the World Series. Are we sports mad Americans, gambling mad Americans, really going to ultimately care all that much? Or will it just be like, all right, shame on us, but now what's on TV?
My answer is there would be a furor about it for a little bit.
Yeah.
And then everyone will go back to normal. And I will
like the Harbaugh at Michigan thing, right? Or a furor and now and whatever. Now
although Harbaugh did absolutely nothing wrong.
And the man's a saint, Jonathan. A total saint.
But so, Matt, but beyond that, The gambling itself is indisputably driving interest in all of these sports.
Right.
I mean, fantasy football has how many more fans has that drawn to not just to the sport, but to an obsessive interest in the sport?
The rise of college basketball in the 30s and 40s is tied to the development of the point spread. The rise of the NFL is tied to gambling. You know, what the leagues tried to do for a long time is hold it at bay and say, we're not going to allow it. I was stunned. I looked it up. How many, and I don't have the exact number, how many NBA and arenas and Major League Baseball stadiums have actual sports books in them now?
Wow, what's the number?
Oh, I don't know. It's over a dozen.
Yeah,
I mean,
they are
there. Yeah, Wrigley Fields got one. They got them in Washington,
D.C.
Well,
and the question is, at what point won't they all have them?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. They will all have it. The NFL is about to put it with, no, sorry, they have a team in Las Vegas. The NBA is about to have a team in Las Vegas. The Super Bowl was just in Las Vegas. These links are getting closer and closer.
Matt,
I'd be careful.
I appreciate you posing the question because our last podcast, we interviewed the awesome Kevin Baker about his book. And, you know, we talked about the Black Sox scandal. And I think there's this notion that because the Black Sox scandal was considered this earthquake in Major League Baseball, it almost brought it down. They had to get a commissioner.
Yeah.
They had to change the way they run their business.
It did change the whole power structure
of the game. I think that gives us this idea that gambling is a catastrophe, and so you want to root it out at all costs. But I think what you're suggesting is that's not really true. I mean, if your highest profile event is compromised, that is a problem.
Yeah. Oh, sure. It's a problem.
But the fact is gambling has swirled around all of these sports for decades. I mean, we're about to talk about college sports betting now, but you've already alluded to it. College basketball in particular has been racked by point shaving scandals. It seems like every 15 years or so.
There's another one out there right now about Temple, maybe shaving points.
Right. There was Boston College in the late 1970s.
That was huge. Yeah. Yeah.
There was City College of New York and Kentucky in the early 1950s.
There was point shaving here in the state of North Carolina in the early 60s, and which is why we used to have this very poorly named North Carolina basketball tournament called the Dixie Classic, and it was very popular. That's why it went away. William Friday said, we're getting out of hand here. But it's coming back fast.
Yeah. So Charlie Baker is the former governor of Massachusetts and played, I guess, college basketball at Harvard. and is the current president of the NCAA. And I saw him quoted just today. So there's 38 states where gambling is now legal, where sports gambling is now legal. Mm-hmm. And some of those states have allowed college sports betting, though some have said you can't bet on college sports.
What is it here in North Carolina?
I don't know.
Okay, yeah.
That'd be an interesting question here.
Yeah.
We should find that out.
Yeah.
But so Charlie Baker is asking that all of the states that have legal gambling outlaw college sports gambling. And one reason for that is, to go back to the point you made earlier about prop bets.
Yeah.
What's happening to college players is somebody's betting on them to score a certain number of points.
Yeah.
And they're missing that mark. So the person is losing money. And these players are getting death threats.
Not just college players. The Cleveland Cavaliers coach, Bickerstaff, said he's received death threats. Yes. Tyrese Halliburton of the Pacers is saying that. Yeah, I mean, this is madness. Yeah. This is just an indictment on so many aspects of our
Tyrese society. Halliburton, the great Indiana Pacers point guard, I think he said something to the effect of he feels like he's just a roulette wheel at this point.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah. Kyle just looked it up. You can bet. Good news, Jonathan.
Okay.
You can bet on college sports in North Carolina.
I'm sorry. I have to end this podcast early. I'll see you all next time.
I got a bet to place. Yeah, I know. So did you want to talk about something else specifically about college gambling? Or
no, I think it's the prop bet element, the focus on individuals, and just the way I feel like that heightens the danger and what's problematic about all this, that did sort of get to me, that idea. Because betting on a team, I mean, there's all the other problems with gambling we've talked about, but betting on a team is one thing. Betting on a player in this age of, I don't know, increasing license people feel to threaten other people's lives anyway on social media it just feels like a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, well, there's that. And that's obviously that's not just sports. That's everywhere, as you were just alluding to. Do you think NIL has anything to do with it? Do you think the idea is out there, well, these guys are now starting to make money, so now they're more open to my criticism, to my death threats?
I think that probably has something to do with it. I mean, I think it might be that the players being threatened really isn't making any money.
Right, probably not.
But I think you're right that in general the idea is that, you know, these players are fair game just like everybody else.
Yeah.
So
yeah. You want to end by talking about that article you sent me about the NCAA and the NIL? I'm going to bring something up. This is getting away from sports gambling, but one last thing. So we got the Sweet 16 coming up, you know, so the NCAA championship for 2024 is going to be decided in the next couple of weeks. But the way I'm understanding this, the NCAA championship for 2025 is going to be decided in the next couple of weeks also, because the transfer portal is suddenly open. It's open.
Yep.
And I was just hearing that this great Pepperdine player is going to Gonzaga, and I'm doing a little research and reading about there's great players at Drake and about Harvard, and they're all expected to go somewhere else. And we think this is good, right? I mean, We've talked about this before.
I'm comfortable saying it's the official position of the show.
Of the show, yeah.
That college players should be paid.
Yes, they should be paid, and they should have agency. They should be able to go where they want. Yes. Whether it's good for college basketball, that's not the question. It's a civil rights issue.
Yes.
Human
rights, labor rights.
Yeah, whatever you want to call it.
Yep.
But so I was reading this article, and what I liked about this article, it was suggesting, oh, here's the going rate for a point guard. It's $200,000 to $400,000. And I was like, oh, is that all it is actually? Because quarterbacks, you know, and for college football,
it's in the millions.
$3 to $5 million. That was interesting. That gives you a sense of how much money football makes versus basketball. Yeah. And there are just a few schools who are making all this money. But because of the unintended consequence of this, I think, because good mid-major and D2 players, you know, they're going to show up and they're going to excel, and then they're quickly going to go to Connecticut or Gonzaga or UNC, or, you know, looking at UNC with all of our former Stanford players, you know, Stanford is suddenly a mid-major when it comes to yeah. comes to sports. I'm sorry for all my Stanford friends. Is this the end of the Cinderella in the NCAA tournament? Like, are there going to be no more mid-majors? Because the only way mid-majors used to win is these guys were together for 2-3 years. They got good. They got older. And then they played, you know, a Kentucky with all of their 18-year-olds, and they would just smoke them.
Right.
This tournament has almost no low seeds in the Sweet 16. The only low seed is NC State,
right.
And NC State is in the ACC.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm a little more sanguine about all of this.
You're saying I'm overreacting?
Well,
you're saying I'm irrational, hysterical?
You're completely out of control.
All right.
Here's what I would say, and I'm thinking both in about football and basketball, where this concern about competitive balance is everyone's talking about.
Well, we can't relate basketball and football. There's never any competitive balance in football.
But I, you know, I was thinking about this. I was sort of scrolling through my head. Who are the teams who have won national championships over the last, in the post UCLA era?
Okay.
So now we're talking close to, you know, about a half a century.
Sure.
Or so. It's all.
No, sure. But Loyola gets to the Final Four. Butler gets to the Final Four. Indiana. I guess what I would say is you're probably not going to win it all, but you're going to make a noise, a little
right.
noise.
Right. So I guess what I would say is that I think if we looked, we would see that happens every 5 or 6 years.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing it'll still happen every 5 or 6 years.
Yeah.
I'm guessing.
I think it's going to happen less.
Okay.
Well, yeah. I just don't think these teams are going to have the. Again, I'm not saying this is wrong. I'm not saying this is immoral.
Yeah.
I think
yeah.
this is one of the unintended consequences of the transfer portal. I was just thinking this today, reading this article.
St. Peter's made the Elite Eight 2 years ago as a 15 seed.
And then they all left.
Right.
But because of the portal.
My point is that these are one-offs anyway.
Well, they all left because the coach left. And so if the coach can leave, they can leave. Right. But you think it's a one-off?
I'm saying these miracle runs are a one-off anyway.
Sure.
So never, you know, it's not like the team comes back the next year.
No. I don't mean Hofstra's can no longer win the NCAA tournament, but I'm saying Hofstra probably can't make the Sweet 16 anymore.
Well, you might be right about that. You might be right about that.
Yeah.
And it is true that those Cinderellas are, I mean, the funny thing about the tournament is from the TV exec's perspective, I'm sure they want two things, like two or three amazing upsets in the first two rounds.
Yes. Yeah.
And then all the name brands.
And all the ones
left.
right.
You know, toward the end of the tournament.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, to bring it back to our discussion about race, if Yale, you know, with all of their white players can somehow be that sin, then we really got. There was an inordinate amount of attention paid to Yale over the weekend, I thought. Yeah. Maybe it's an Ivy League thing. Maybe it's a white thing. Maybe those are synonyms.
I think it was when John Wall was at Kentucky. And Cornell beat them.
Uh-huh.
And everyone was like, oh, amazing Cinderella story. And Bomani Jones, the great sportscaster, is also a UNC alum, said, I think we've got backwards
who the Cinderella is.
Like, these Kentucky kids came from absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
You know, the Cornell kids have had everything handed to them on a silver platter. Just to your point about the Yale. I told you, I mean, I saw Oakland beat Kentucky last week, and that was absolutely amazing. And it would be a shame if, you know, that just becomes a rarer and rarer occurrence.
I agree. Yeah. I think it's going to happen.
Yeah.
Again, I just had this idea for the first time this morning, but I'm going full throttle with it. This is what I believe.
We'll check back in.
Yeah. Well, all right. That was fun talking about the NCAA, talking about gambling. I hope our fears are a little overblown when it comes to sports gambling. No, they're not.
Probably
of course,
not.
There's an avalanche coming. It's obvious. We'll just have to see how soon and how damaging the avalanche is. Yeah. All right. Well, this was fun.
Yes. So just as a reminder, this has been another episode of the Agony of Defeat podcast, and you can find this podcast wherever you find your podcast. And we really would ask you to like, rate, especially 5-star rating, spread the word. We really want to thank our awesome producer, Kyle, who's working so many different devices right now, I can't even keep track of them all. And Samantha Rubin, our other overseas production team person extraordinaire. So thank them both for this.
Please support the Cinderella story that is the agony of defeat. I think that's what we're saying.
All right. See you next time.